neighbors. Welcome to Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador Farm and Food Show. I'm Ivan Emke, your host. This is episode 23 of season 2. Today we head to a land that experiences some of the same agricultural challenges that we do in Newfoundland and Labrador, but they've made some different choices. While we have rock and sand, they have lava and tefla. We both have peat. Their population is about two-thirds the population of our province, and while they are a country with some freedoms reserved for countries, they're also connected to the EU Economic Zone, which places some limitations on their markets. Oh, and one other difference. While our food self-sufficiency index is somewhere around 10 or 12%, they produce about 50% of their own food. Of course, I'm talking about Iceland.
The problem is that there is an increasing gap between the rural and the urban. Family farming is the best way of farming in Iceland if we want to maintain the rural communities. There's no future in consumers and farmers fighting more or less about things. It is a matter of general security, public security, to maintain the rural populations.
We've met Olafur Durmundsund before on this show. Last time we chatted, I was at his small sheep farm near Selfoss in Iceland. In addition to farming and growing food, he worked for many years for the Farmers Association of Iceland. He taught at the Agricultural University of Iceland. He serves on international slow food committees. He has briefed political parties on agricultural policy. He's written academic articles on agricultural production and policy. And he generally keeps on top of all things related to food in Iceland and beyond. I chatted with him on Zoom earlier this year. I started by asking him about how things were down on the farms of Iceland since COVID-19 arrived. He talked about slaughterhouse concerns and the elaborate process of gathering sheep from the highlands in the fall, the country's struggles with imports and more, all of which have been increasingly complicated with a pandemic waiting in the wings.
The farmers, they have been doing their best to maintain all their farming activities without interruption. They have been doing their best, and during the summer they just carried on with their haymaking and growing their crops and harvesting. Of course, there were some limitations to what they could do, but basically the sort of rural life was not so much interrupted. Mm-hmm. What was worrying, though, in towards the late summer, that they had some worries about the slaughterhouses. We have quite big slaughterhouses in at least 7 of them for sheep. They have to operate during a rather limited period from about early September until early November. They had some worries during the summer to have the foreign workers. There's a group of people coming regularly to Iceland from New Zealand, the UK also, and some other countries. They earn quite good money over a short period of time, so they seem to come regularly, the same people.
Yeah. In New Zealand, are they abattoir workers back there, slaughterhouse?
They are actually. Some of them are involved in shearing. They are doing this at a time when they have some free time from other tasks, such as shearing of sheep. They are well trained to do the job. So then they had this problem during the summer that they would not be able to get these people. And this turned out to be the case. Many of the foreign people, they couldn't come to Iceland. And then they imposed very strict regulations at the slaughterhouses. And then there was another limitation which concerned the gathering of sheep and sorting of sheep, because they said, okay, you people, you will be gathering in such large numbers to sort the sheep. What you have to do, you have to make a list of every person going there to gather the sheep and sort the sheep, and you're not allowed to allow any visitors. I was in this role here in Reykjavik. I'm in charge of planning the gathering of sheep here now. I had to pick up the names of all the people we needed to gather the sheep and also to be there present to pick up the sheep. And we had to have their telephone numbers and preferably emails. And in fact, we took it very seriously. We were wearing masks when we met in the morning, and nothing came up. No, there was no infections. So we actually got through the fall with the gathering, sorting of sheep and slaughtering without any difficulties. But there's always good things which come out of the bad things. Now I have the list. I knew many of these people, but not all of them. So now I can contact them anytime. This is an example of something good which comes out of COVID. Of course, we have not had any meetings. For example, we have not been able to hold the annual general meeting in our sheep society here for Reykjavik. And various annual general meetings of various societies have had to be postponed. Well, there have been some on Zoom meetings like this. I'm an active member of Slow Food in Iceland. I'm on the board. And for example, there was an annual general meeting of the Goat Breeders Society, which I'm also a member of. Although I don't have any goats, I'm a supporter. So some of these functions, rather sort of social functions, they have been disrupted.
Are there more and more goats in Iceland?
The goat, Icelandic goat breed is a very small one, and it is still endangered. We have only about 1,400 winter-fed goats in Iceland, but only about a decade ago or so, they were much fewer. So the numbers have been growing over the last decade or so. And the goat breeders were only about between 30 and 40 for many, many years. But now there are probably around just over 100. So, so there is some growing interest in keeping goats. Farmers generally, they have been doing fairly well. And production of agricultural products has by and large been normal. There are some difficulties, though, I must tell you about in our agriculture now at the moment. And this is mainly due to the fact that our tourist sector has shrunk a great deal. So this also means that they are needing less food. They are not buying so much meat and vegetables and milk, etc. So there is a slight problem now, which is a kind of overproduction. This mainly concerns cattle, beef. They have not been able to slaughter. So the slaughterhouses, they do not want to store the meat for a long period of time. So they are reluctant to slaughter when their stocks are piling up. So there are some stocks now of beef, which would have been sold easily if in a normal situation. The dairy sector is doing quite well. They are exporting some products and they seem to be able to adapt. They are not complaining much. The sheep producers, there are some stocks there, partly because of there are fewer tourists, but there is a heavy competition with imported stuff now. And this is a shadowy side. Since you were here visiting us, there have been growing imports of, especially of pig meat and poultry meat, and even of beef, not sheep meat though. And they negotiated some quotas with the EU some years back, but it appears now it was quite clear that the calculations were totally wrong. So we were actually importing much more than we were obliged to import. There has been a heavy pressure from some of the importers who just want to import and make money. They don't care about Icelandic farming. And they have been importing greater amounts of these products, and they have been in competition with our home production. So this has made matters worse. In the vegetable sector, this has not been a problem. We have to import quite a lot of vegetables in late winter, especially, and in early summer, and they have been able to sell their products quite well. We also have a small sector of horse meat production. And horse meat, it used to be a major type of meat for consumption, but nowadays it is not so much. But there's always a fairly good market for it. There has been some delay, like with beef. There has been some delays in the slaughtering of horses. But the good thing about slaughtering of horses and cattle is that this is taking place more or less throughout the year. So sheep slaughtering is mainly taking place during these 2 months, sort of September, October. These are the perhaps greatest difficulties if we look at the production generally.
Do you have a suggestion for a piece of music that I can use for this?
You know that I'm very fond of Iggy Pop, but he is a little bit wild. I think David Bowie is good too. He's one of my favorite. If I could mention something else, why not Cream with Eric Clapton? When Cream became well known, I was in the time when I was leaving university at Aberystwyth in Wales. Cream was a very interesting band, very good band with three people, and Clapton comes to Iceland nearly every year.
Is there a Cream song that you remember in particular?
Oh, what is that? Ah, that best known.
The Sunshine of Your Love? Or
Sunshine of Your Love. Sunshine of Your Love is perfect. It's a very good song, and I like it very much.
It's getting near dawn. When nights grow the tired eyes, I'll soon be with you, my love. Give you my dull surprise. I'll be with you, darling, soon. been waiting so long to be where I'm going in the sunshine of your love. I'm with you, my love, the light shining through on you.
Yes, I'm with you, my love. It's the morning, just we two.
I'll stay with you, darling, now. I'll stay with you till my seas are dried up. I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going in the sunshine of your love.
With the classic rock trio Cream with their hit Sunshine of Your Love, as requested by my guest Ólafur Dermundsson of Iceland. In this section, he starts off by talking about some of the challenges around imports of food and of animal feed and the high value placed on innovation in his country.
But as far as I can hear from farmers, they are really conducting their business as normal. They are worried about these growing imports because this is going to erode our food security and food sovereignty. And here in the slow food movement, we are sending out some declarations and issuing our opinions about this, because this is something we have to be careful about when we have these epidemics or endemics. We really have to look into food security. And transport may be disrupted, and also supply from certain areas. So we in Iceland, who are importing roughly 50% of our food and drinks, we want to maintain, at least the farming community wants to maintain at least this level of food security. But the problem is that there is an increasing gap between the rural and the urban. Mm-hmm. And as we have discussed before, it's the problem in many other countries, so people don't always realize that you have to produce the food.
Yeah.
You cannot just buy it in the shop. It has to be produced.
Yeah.
And the production process is quite long in many cases. And so we, of course, we who are promoting agriculture, we always try to remind people that if you want to get your food, it has to be produced, and the farmers have to have some fair income. There are good things in Iceland now. We are growing more grain. We are growing more barley, and we are growing even some oats and some wheat on a small scale, and we are developing some new products from seaweed and from some vegetables, and then of course in the fishing industry there are some promising products, and these are products which are based on quite a lot of research in the academic sector. And there are many people in Iceland who are involved in trying to introduce some novel products.
For the dairy and the beef farmers and pigs and so on, do they still have to ship in a lot of their feed for inputs, or is more and more of that being grown in the country?
They import a lot of corn, maize for pigs and poultry, and partly also for the cattle. But for example, the barley, most of this barley is produced on the farms and is not so much on the market. The cattle producers and even the pig producers are growing some barley themselves, which is a very healthy sign. There is, for example, in the south of Iceland, there is a very good pig farm where they are growing all their grain. They're growing all the grain they need. And there are some cattle producers who are doing quite well. And we always use, of course, we use some fish meal in our feed rations for all livestock. This is the best protein we can get.
Mm-hmm.
It's a high biological value, and it has some good content of minerals too. If I feed my sheep with some concentrates, I always ask for concentrates with the fish meal and without GMO. We can get that. And there is no GMO growing in Iceland, out of doors. There is some growing in greenhouses for certain products, but not in farm, not in food production. It's only for cosmetics, and it's not allowed.
I asked Ólafur about home-produced versus imported and commercially produced vegetables. Can people taste the difference? As you'll see, he's pretty clear on this point.
for many years, they've shown how great the difference is between home-produced vegetables and imported vegetables. And in addition to that, the quality is always better for the home-produced vegetables. Take, for example, tomatoes or carrots or cucumbers, something like that. There's a clear difference in just things like taste. The difference is so big that sometimes people are not buying any of these products unless they are Icelandic. They don't look at them. And we have a rule here at home from our experience. We never buy carrots if they are imported from the Netherlands or somewhere. They are different quality. They are totally different from the Icelandic product. Or tomatoes, no, we don't look at them. They are quite different and they are slightly cheaper, but they have a carbon footprint on them, so the price is not real. Environmental cost is not included. It's externalized. And of course, transport distance within Iceland is much, much shorter. So we get it very fresh and we get all the eggs. They are all Icelandic. All the eggs are Icelandic. We are not importing any eggs. I would say there are hardly any dairy products imported anymore. There were some dairy products available here, but people didn't like them. So dairy products are really only Icelandic.
You have a, like in terms of dairy and so on, you have a pretty vibrant secondary production sector as well. Like you make cheese and skyr and all of these other things.
Yes.
In the country.
Yes.
So that's something different from Newfoundland and Labrador, where we have two cheesemakers in the whole province.
This is one of the good things about our dairy sector. Our dairy sector has been, I would say, over the last few decades, it has been increasing tremendously the sort of supply of various products. There are always some new products coming on the market. Skyr, of course, is very sort of classical. But there are cheeses, for example. There's a totally different situation now to what it was, say, 30 years ago. And when I was a young boy and a young man, something like 50 years ago, there were only two types of cheese available in Iceland. Only white cheese, dairy cheese, and then was a brown cheese.
A brown cheese?
Oster. So that were only two types of cheese in those days. But now there are so many of them. The dairy sector here has been doing extremely well.
I've always been intrigued about the variety of ways that Iceland has developed policy that supports rural farmers. One of these relate to the licensing of the salmon fisheries. There, the farmers who own land that borders on popular salmon rivers get a healthy share of the license fees. That provides them with some income based on their location, and it acknowledges their work in maintaining the health of those rivers. It's a form of a rather modern, cutting-edge concept called payment for ecosystem services, except that in this case, it goes back about a century now.
If I go to Iceland and I want to do some salmon fishing, I pay a fee, and that fee goes largely then to the farmers whose land borders. It's like an off-farm job, but it isn't a job, really. It's an off-farm.
It is just an income. You get a check paid into your bank account, and I know that it makes a difference. Probably on some of these farms, or even many of them, this would probably cover the food bill for the family. These societies, they started to form them about 100 years ago. I know this quite well because my grandfather in the northwest of Iceland, he was one of the people who founded a society like that. And when I was a young boy and a young man on the farm, I saw the people were coming. They had their society and they rented it both to foreigners and Icelanders. Mm-hmm. And even in the early 20th century, there was a wealthy Englishman who came every summer. He rented the whole river and he came with his family and they stayed on the farm. And my mother was able to speak English very early because she was speaking English to the girls. And this man who was excellent. He came every summer. He was a friend of the people and he paid a rent for the river. He had the river, rented it for several years, never any overfishing, no problems. And this has been repeated in Iceland in many places. So we have nothing against these foreigners coming in and renting, like Eric Clapton. He comes regularly and he just buys a license in the rivers which he favors. He has been doing it for years. They pay rather high fees for this, but they say that this is about the best they can get. And they have peace and quiet here. And they can walk through the airports and Eric Clapton, I mean, he can walk down in Reykjavik and he's quite safe. And, you know, David Albarn from Blur, he has become an Icelandic citizen. Yeah. He likes to stay in Iceland quite a lot instead of London. So he has a house here.
Yeah. Request of my guest, Oliver Dermanson, that was Cream with Sunshine of Your Love. In this final section, we talk about self-provisioning efforts, food security, and making alliances between urban and rural.
One of the things that happened back to the pandemic that happened in Canada, people started to grow their own gardens or did more self-provisioning of food. Did that kind of thing happen in Iceland? Did more people get gardens or goat?
Yes, I can tell you what happened. After 2008, when we had this collapse of the banks, all the three main banks, financial crisis in October 2008, there was a big change in the minds of many people. And immediately the following year, we noticed that people were getting more allotments to grow their own vegetables. And there was a trend, and it is still there. There is a trend now to people in urban areas to have little gardens, not so much by their houses, but more owned by the local authorities. The local authorities have allocated some land, and I have one here nearby me. Well, it's just a 5-minute walk down the road. It used to be a garden for school children. We used to have a lot of these gardens for school children for many, many years, but then they decided to turn it into community gardens for people of all ages, and there is less growing of vegetables in Iceland in the urban areas than there was, say, 50, 60, 70 years ago. Okay. We had more of it then, but it is coming back. With livestock, no. It is not coming with livestock, but it is a little bit with poultry. It's a clear sign. In Reykjavik, it was forbidden to keep a few backyard hens, a few poultry, until only about 6-7 years ago. And I was one of the people who was promoting this idea that people would be allowed to keep a few hens. And believe it or not, over the last 6-7 years, there are probably in Reykjavik over 100 people who are keeping a few hens.
Do you think that people after the pandemic, do they have a slightly different view of food or food security, or will that continue?
I think it could have a lasting effect, because I think it will also link in with our growing debate on efforts to reduce carbon footprints, especially the young people. The young people are very much concerned about the future, and they realize that we have to apply various measures to reduce our carbon footprint, not only by changing our use of petrol and diesel and all that, going more over to other sources of energy. But I think they are linking this a little bit. So I have my greatest hope is in the young people, my grandchildren, rather than anything else.
You've talked a little bit about needing to have better connections between rural and urban. And that's something that certainly in Newfoundland and Labrador is an issue. And throughout most of Canada, there are big divisions between urban and rural. Similar to Newfoundland and Labrador in Iceland, the rural is very prominent in your literature and in your culture. And there's a real idolization or a value placed on rural.
Yes.
But that doesn't necessarily mean that people understand how to preserve it today. During the pandemic, lots of people left the urban center and traveled in rural. How do we bring those two together, that consumers, people who live in cities, understand their natural allegiance and alliance with farmers who live in the rural areas?
Actually, the similar trend was witnessed in Iceland here last summer. There was a lot more traveling of Icelanders traveling within Iceland. They were replacing some of the trips to Spain and some other countries, sunnier countries, by just traveling in Iceland. And I can give you an example. The government of Iceland decided to give a small sum of money to each person who would travel in Iceland. It's a small sum of money, but it was something you had to be away for at least one day, and they could get this money very easily. And this was done in order to encourage people to travel within the country. There was this trend, and Yes, I think this was positive because they were traveling quite a lot, visiting farms and staying on farm holiday services. And again, turning to the young people, they would be traveling with their parents and they would be having more contact with the rural areas than perhaps before, because in Iceland, people are traveling a lot to other countries, warmer countries generally. Mm-hmm. But this was so much reduced during this last year and still is. So I think this could have helped to generate interest in what farmers are doing, and also that it could help to bridge this gap between the urban and the rural communities. If there is any effect of COVID, it would be positive on that situation. And there was clearly, I found it was clearly better understanding on food security, especially early in the pandemic, because people are concerned. As soon as they saw that some items were missing from the shelves, you know, it had an effect. What I'm hoping is that our trade union movement is perhaps understanding this better than before. It's no future in consumers and farmers fighting more or less about things. On arguing about things, they should understand that the farmers, they are like members of trade unions. They need some reasonable income. They have to be able to survive themselves and their families. And family farming is the best way of farming in Iceland if we want to maintain the rural communities. And I also mentioned another issue, which is debated quite a lot now in Iceland. And this is the general security of people, because we've had a lot of earthquakes in the southwest of Iceland. We have to remember that 65-70% of the population of Iceland lives on the southwest corner, which is volcanically active from time to time. If you have to move large numbers of people, evacuate Reykjavik and certain areas here, you really want to have a strong communities mm-hmm. in other parts of Iceland, both farming communities and all towns and fishing villages and all that. So it is a matter of general security, public security, to maintain the rural populations. So there is a very strong element in Iceland, in our urban areas, of people who want Icelandic agriculture to flourish. And all opinion polls taken in Iceland over the years, they've always shown very good support for Icelandic agriculture. It's something like 70%. People want Icelandic products. And the COVID pandemic has, if anything, it has created a better atmosphere for this sort of discussion.
Well, you take care of yourself, and hopefully we'll see you.
I hope you are keeping well.
Yes, things are fine. We have nothing to complain about, really.
Thank you very much. All the best to you.
All the best. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. There's been a heavy pressure from some of the importers who just want to import and make money. They don't care about Icelandic farming. We in Iceland who are importing roughly 50% of our food and drink. If you want to get your food, it has to be produced, and the farmers have to have some fair income. And all opinion polls taken in Iceland over the years, they've always shown very good support for Icelandic agriculture.
This has been Fit to Eat, the Newfoundland Labrador and sometimes Iceland Farm and Food Show. To listen to other episodes of the show or for more information, go to fittoeatnl.ca. The music for today's show was Sunshine of Your Love by Cream. The theme music, Cluck Old Hen, was performed this week by The Steel Wheels. This is a production of Kitchen Table Communications. I'm Ivan Emke. Join me again next time. I'll be right here. Happy trails.
My greatest hope is in the young people, my grandchildren.